are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up and welcome to another Thursday edition of Locked On NBA. I am Jackson Gatlin, host of Locked On Rockets. He is Tony East, host of Locked On Pacers, filling in for Matt Moore today. And we have a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. We got Kemba. We got Dinwiddie. We got LaMarcus Aldridge. What else do we have, Tony?
Depot, John Collins, Mike D'Antoni. It was a wild third, fourth, whatever you want to call it, day of official free agency. There's a lot to break down.
Yeah, and we're going to get to all of that in just a moment after a quick message from our friends, rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Be sure to visit rockauto.com. Now, where we're going to start first, Tony, you want to start with Kemba, right?
Yeah, the headliner of the day, right? He's able to get a buyout from the Thunder. I'd be very curious to see how much of his $74 million remaining on his contract the Thunder were able to get out of by buying him out. That's a huge number, but buyout with the Thunder, signing with the Knicks for 2 years, $18 million. Sounds like there's an option on the second half of that. A New York guy from there, had an amazing game or two in college for UConn in the Garden, a legend basically in the city, going to that team who needed an upgrade at point guard, an ascending team who did well in the East last year. It's a great fit. It's a great contract. It's great for the Thunder. It's a slam dunk signing, and it's super interesting for both Kemba and the Knicks to me.
So I want to, first off, like, over under, how much, like, are we talking, like, how much money do we think he gave up on that contract? Do we think he gave like over under 20 million?
It's probably close to that to me for the Thunder to want to do it, right? Because that Sam Presti MO has been, we'll take your unwanted stuff, we'll play the guy for 30 games, make him look better, and then flip him to a new team or figure out what to do with him when his value's restored a little bit. So the fact that the Thunder said, we don't want any assets for this guy, we think we're getting enough of a deal right now, makes me think it was probably substantial. I mean, he got $18 million guaranteed from the Knicks, so maybe that's even the benchmark, is $18 million. So probably quite a bit, I would say.
You know, and I know that not to derail us in the first segment already, but I know that my Rockets with John Wall are looking at this buyout like what can we do here with Wall? But I don't know if there's a team out there chomping at the bit to pick up John Wall, who I will say is still a player that is, you know, capable of contributing to a winning, you know, conducive to winning basketball games, just not at the $40 million plus price tag that he currently has. One of the few contracts probably worse than Kemba's was in the NBA. But let's get back to focusing on Kemba Walker here. I immediately, my first thought when I heard about Kemba to the Knicks, Tony, was he does not strike me as a Tibbs guy.
Yeah, he doesn't. His defense is certainly his weakness. And last year, like, I'm going to gas up the Knicks. They deserve a lot of credit. This is a good signing for them. And Kemba's really talented, especially at $8 million. But like, Kemba was hurt last year and was kind of not good, like, on the whole for the Celtics. And a lot of that's coming off of an injury. Like, he has reasonable reasons for that. And he had some games where he was excellent, right? His stats don't look terrible in the aggregate if you really own in on what he did over the course of the full season. But his shooting efficiency was down in general last year. His three-pointer lacked a little bit of burst. And then when the playoffs came for the Celtics, he was atrocious, right? He got hurt in that series as well, but he shot 32%, missed a bunch of threes, only scored 13 points per game, right? So there were times last year where Kemba was not that awesome, but at only $8 million, it's huge. So I agree with you that the Tibbs MO, the way that he gets guys to buy in on defense, he likes to load up on the strong side, team-oriented, no-nonsense. You know, Kemba is certainly no-nonsense and will fit in culturally, but the way he likes to play, Kemba might struggle with some of his strengths. But that said, that team was toggling between Derrick Rose and Emmanuel Quickley and Elfrid Payton at point guard. So I think even bad Kemba's probably an upgrade there, but I agree that the Tibbs fit is certainly a little awkward in New York.
All right. Now, with the Kemba Walker to New York situation, I have to ask, and I want to, because we're going to have to brainstorm here. We're going to have to see together where we decide we want to slot him. Kemba Walker is the blank best point guard in the Eastern Conference. All right, Tony, how can we do this? All right, so let's start. We're starting at the top. I mean, Kyrie, Trey. Like, I'm just going to throw out names. We're going to have to rank them, but like, I'm going to throw out names. So Kyrie, Trey, Drew, Kyle Lowry.
Simmons, do you view Ben Simmons as a point guard in this discussion?
not for the purposes of this discussion. No, understood. We're not gonna. Yeah, we're passing on the Ben Simmons.
A guy we'll talk about later. Spencer Dinwiddie, I would probably rank above Kemba Walker when he's healthy and playing well. So that's another one.
He's Brogdon.
He's Brogdon. That one's close. I think last year Brogdon was definitely better. But at healthy, you know, if Kemba even takes a step forward this year, I would imagine he would get back to a little bit above Brogdon's level. An interesting one for me, Lonzo with the Bulls now. Where do you put Lonzo versus Kemba right now?
Ooh.
Yeah, see, that's a hard one.
I mean, the Bulls are obviously just a really interesting situation with everything they got going on, cashing in on this, you know, very interesting core that they're developing. But I think with Lonzo, I feel like I'd put him above Kemba right now, just because you got to give the benefit of the doubt. Lonzo had a pretty solid year, and just again, the Kemba down year is really, really rough. So that puts us seven guards comfortably, or at least that we think ahead of Kemba. Semi. Okay. Are we missing anybody? I don't think we're missing anybody down that list.
I don't either. You know, we'll see who are the Celtics going to start.
You're the Eastern Conference rep, Tony. Come on. Get with it.
I should be the Eastern Conference rep. Yeah, but I mean, so much has changed in the last couple of days. My brain is just mush trying to remember who's on what team now. Like, I don't know who Fred VanVleet's probably going to start a point guard for the Raptors. He was probably better than Kemba last year, but I wouldn't really call him a point guard. Nominally, just thinking about the way he plays, I don't know. So it's hard to say with some teams like that that don't really have the rotation set. But I think our seven seem pretty solid, and eight if you count Simmons. So yeah, it's hard, but I would say, yeah, maybe he might be in the lower half of the starters in the East if that's where you're headed with this.
Which is still, I mean, even considering that he would potentially be in the lower half of the Eastern Conference starting point guard debate, that's still crazy how much of a sizable upgrade bad Kemba is for the Knicks. And then you're still talking about the fact that you might get good Kemba back, right? Like, you know, depending on how he returns, depending on, you know, how this offseason goes, the work that he puts in and how he meshes with that Knicks team under Tibbs, right? You could get good Kemba back, and that could be the shot in the arm, you know, that boost that Knicks team needs to really try and, you know, keep contending with the upper echelon of that Eastern Conference. They had a really, you know, they were the feel good story of the NBA, I feel like, or at least of the, you know, maybe of the East last year. Really, I kind of felt like of the NBA. Or am I overstepping here?
No, they're close to the full NBA. Like usually there's one team every season that just wildly exceeds preseason expectations, and they're the fun, awesome team. It was, you know, the team I covered, the Pacers, it was them in the Oladipo season in 2017-18. And those are just awesome seasons to cover because every game you're not expecting the team to win, and then they're awesome. And the Knicks did that night after night last year and ended up being fourth in the East. So, yeah, they were one of the feel-good stories in the conference. And if Kemba's good, right, you vault him immediately over – probably Brogdon. Who knows how good Lowry's going to be at 36 next year. Definitely will pass Dinwiddie, right? Like, he could get up to a point where he makes them really good. Like, they were the four seed. Like, they were already a home court team in the playoffs. If they add a dynamic guy who's been in the playoffs before, been in deep, not necessarily deep, but has been in past the first round with the Celtics before, I mean, that could be a huge deal for them.
Well, coming up, we want to talk about another point guard in the Eastern Conference with a new change of scenery. Spencer Dinwiddie, as well as the other guys that are on the move throughout all of this free agency hubbub. We're going to get there after a quick message from our friends over at rockauto.com. Because look, with the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's basically impossible to stock all the parts that you would want in a traditional, like, brick-and-mortar chain storefront, right? Why would you want to, like, have to spend the hassle driving there in person? You get there and they're like, oh, we don't even carry that part. Sorry, go online. Just visit rockauto.com. The prices are always reliably low. Why would you want to spend up to 30, 50, or even 100% more for the exact same parts? They've got you covered for everything you need there. Their website is so easy to navigate. You can quickly find the brands and specifications that you need for your car or truck. And when you go to checkout, when you hit the little shopping cart icon, when you go to checkout, be sure to write "locked on" in their "how did you hear about us" box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com. And continuing on here at Locked On NBA Thursday, he is Tony East. I am Jackson Gatlin. We are without Matt Moore. He sends his sincerest apologies. We'll make him pay for that next week. But let's get into the Spencer Dinwiddie news, which, Tony, this trade, I'm like losing track of this trade because first it was a sign and trade, then it was the three-team deal, then it was
a screenshot on my phone. I'm ready.
And now it's suddenly a five-team deal involving the Lakers and Russ. And there's there's so much going on with this deal. Please tell me that you have at least like a 40% grasp on it, because I don't even know if I'm up to that point on who's going away. I've got it in front of me and I understand like the base level of the deal.
So I cover the Pacers. That's it. I cover the Pacers and the Pacers are involved. So I could probably get you pretty close to 100% just because I've had to think about this all day and how maybe
Doug McDermott. Go ahead. This is actually so perfect, because when you and I have been on this show together, it feels like every single time there's something Pacers related for you to hang your cap on time, whether it's Bjorkgren and like his like meltdown or like whatever. It's always Pacers related when you're on the show. I love it. It's great.
It always does work out. Yeah, this trade's crazy. The Pacers are getting the 22nd pick out of it. But yeah, the Rush trade, the Wizards were able to take back actually more money than they sent out originally, the original agreed to trade basically. So how they're able to work it in a day is Dinwiddie comes to the Wizards as a part of that salary aggregation. We don't need to get too nerdy. This is a podcast, but the rules basically allow the Wizards to take in Dinwiddie without the Nets needing to receive equivalent salary in return. So they'll get a second round pick and then another second round pick swap from the Wizards. And then the Spurs are taking some unwanted salary from the Wizards to fully facilitate the trade. So in theory, there has to be a little bit more added. So the Spurs and Nets have to make a deal with all the teams in the trade. That's not relevant to this. Basically, the crux of the story is Spencer Dinwiddie to Washington is included in the Rush trade now, and Dinwiddie's getting 3 years, $62 million. The Nets are getting a second rounder and a second round swap, which I think for them, getting anything for him is good. He could have jolted for nothing in free agency, and the Wizards get a guy that fits really well with Beal. They're a fast-paced team. I think that is a good fit for them, with a nice young coach getting a dynamic point guard who can pass is really good. So, I mean, I hate to be that guy after the Kemba trade who's just like, everything is great. But like every deal today that was made, I was like, wow, that's really good for the team that got the guy. So that's a good one for the Wizards to me.
You know, I really do like how I feel like it's becoming more commonplace, and maybe it feels more prevalent like this offseason than previous offseasons, but it feels like the whole sign and trade situation, like it felt kind of heavy last offseason. Like it felt like there were a lot of sign and trade deals that took place. And then this offseason feels like there's a lot of teams taking advantage of sign and trade opportunities to get back at least a little bit of value for players that they would otherwise lose for nothing, and then turning around and generating these really nerdy, amazing traded player exceptions, which can then be used to absorb other players and make do with, you know, and so it's just,
and I make feel another like, trade exception with that.
Right. Yeah. And it's just a never ending cycle of just where does the TPE stop? How far down the TPE rabbit hole can we go? No, but I just feel like it's, you know, executives getting really like creative and clever with how to utilize, you know, the cap gymnastics and whatnot, trying to figure things out. And especially in a summer where like the money felt like it dried up really quickly, where you've still got some free agents floating around out there, like Reggie Jackson, Kelly Oubre, Dennis Schroeder, who, you know, I guess bet on themselves thinking that they would make more on the market than they did, or than they wound up, you know, declining. Poor Dennis Schroeder. We'll talk about him declining his, you know, sizable contract offer in a minute. But, you know, I feel like it's really cool by these NBA executives, front offices, to find ways to facilitate these trades. But back on Dinwiddie, $60 million, 3 years, or just under $60 million, 3 years. Is that, I feel like that's a little risky for a guy that's coming off of partially torn ACL. Do you not? Like, I mean, yes, you look at the numbers from his last healthy season, really productive numbers. I got them pulled up right over here. A little over 20 points per game, almost 7 assists per night, 3.5 rebounds, shot. Could have shot a little better from behind the arc, only a little over 30%, almost 50% from the floor. Solid numbers overall, but where's the confidence level at that he's realistically going to be back to being that guy is my biggest question for the Wizards, and why they would, you know, be willing to make the jump at this deal, you know?
Yeah, it's a partial tear, which I think would give me as a GM a little confidence that it's not a full tear, that he can get back to at least close to it. Maybe that's a little bit of a rosy analysis of the situation, but that's one thing. I think to me too, even beyond, can he get back to that level? Is for Dinwiddie's career, he's played over 68 games once, right? So in a normal season, that's missing 14 games. That's like a fifth of your team's game. So just from a value perspective, that's over $20 million a year for a guy who isn't playing that much. Like, you have to question that deal as well. Again, coming back to me covering the Pacers, Malcolm Brogdon misses 10 to 15 games every season. It's a similar thing where it's like you're paying this guy a lot and he's not playing. That sometimes creates some rub. But I think that beyond the stats, you know, that season you're looking at, he was really good for the Nets, but he was sort of their first option, kind of 1A, 1B with LeVert that year. With Wizards, easily number two, right? Beal will be their play finisher more often, which I think will help him, you know, take better looks or more calculated approaches to his shots. So that'll help his stats and efficiency a little bit. But I agree with you that the money, given his injury history, is a little concerning, especially for a team that might really need him to be good.
All right, let's shift gears here, and we've been talking about point guards for a solid minute. Let's go big for a moment. LaMarcus Aldridge says that he is seriously considering a return to the NBA after, you know, retiring, after stepping away due to heart complications, right? You know, I wonder, you know, I'm immediately kind of caught between thinking like, okay, well, where is he at, you know, physically? If it was enough of a concern for him to want to step away and then now to be, you know, to feel comfortable enough to want to come back. First off, great story. You know, LMA seems like a really likable guy, you know, had a really solid NBA career. It was really, really sad news to see him step away the way that he did, especially because he signed with the Nets and it was like a day later that he said that he was retiring from the NBA. Everybody thought they were going to get, you know, the Nets were going to have LMA and Blake Griffin, right? You know, suddenly, you know, waiting in the wings to help the super team of James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving. And then LMA steps away. So where, we don't have any reports yet on where he's thinking about going. Is there anywhere that immediately jumps out to the forefront of your mind, Tony? Because I'm immediately thinking maybe he just goes and hangs out with the oldest team in the league, the LA Lakers, because, you know, why not at this point? But
yeah, the Lakers certainly will probably be a team that he considers, maybe back to the Nets, right? The team that really wanted to give him a role and money last year would make a lot of sense to me. First of all, the headline with stories like this, you know, I think about Chris Bosh, who had a heart issue as well when he was returning to the league, is always like, I hope their health is squared away for them to do this, because heart injuries are the one you don't want to mess with, right? We just heard about this with Jared Butler before he entered the NBA draft, that he had to, you know, have his medical consultation reviewed basically before they could determine if he was ready to go in the NBA. So I'm assuming LaMarcus Aldridge has incredible medical team helping him back, which is great, but of course wishing the best for his health. But in terms of fits and teams, you know, the Heat seem like a good one to me. They don't have a ton of depth. They've kind of squared around their team as they've added some guys, and he could fit, you know, kind of as a stretch big, a depth big for them. I like that one. I like the Wizards a little bit as well for similar reasons. And then out West, you mentioned the Lakers. That's a good one. Basically any contender you could kind of sniff and go, yeah, that's a good fit. The Mavs kind of need a vet and a threat on offense. So if he can be, you know, a mid-range threat, I think he'd fit well with and without Luka on the floor for that team. But there are numerous given his skill sets, right? Like he proved that on a good team like the Nets, even only like four or five games, that he can still provide some value. So a lot of good contending teams I think he'd fit on for like a 10 to 15 minute role.
All right. And before we round out this segment and dive into our final segment, let's go Victor Oladipo, who is going to return to the Miami Heat on a 1-year deal after I just, again,
as the resident in this one.
Oh man, just how deep does the Victor Oladipo rabbit hole go? Yeah. No, I mean, look, as the guy who covered Oladipo for, you know, a small portion of this past season with the Houston Rockets, I cannot thank the heavens enough that he turned down that 2-year, 40 some odd million extension that the Rockets offered him midway through this past season, because had he said yes to that deal, the Rockets would be straddled with not only his contract, but also that of John Wall's and Eric Gordon's. And Oladipo bet on himself, and unfortunately it did not pay out for him. And right now he's basically going to be on a 1-year like prove it deal with the Heat.
Yeah, with the Pacers, he turned down like 4 for $100 on an extension. So he definitely, not only did he bet on himself, he really wanted to get to the Heat, I think. And I think you, coming from the Rockets side, kind of figured that out, you know, as time went along with Houston, that he really wanted to get to Miami, and he got there. So I think part of betting on himself is he's really happy off the court to be in Miami. But yeah, he really thought he could come back from injury and provide a ton of value. He was really good for Houston right when he came back, right when he got traded there. So I think he actually made a smart play at first to bet on himself, but the second quad injury really killed his chances of being able to do that, which is why he needs to take this minimum. And hopefully for him and the way his career's gone, he can, you know, get on the court for the Heat this year, first of all. I'm not sure what his exact timeline is. I know that his side has kind of said early this next season that seems really rosy given the injury. But if he does and he can play well, that'd be huge for him, because Miami could now sign him to any deal the following year, which is why he part of the reason I think he signed with them as well. So, yeah, he definitely failed to bet on himself the first time, and injuries are a big factor. But I think it's the best place for him to do that is with a team that's been good at rehabbing guys' values. But, yeah, tough story for him after turning down two extensions from teams that wanted him to then have to sign a one-year minimum deal with Miami. But that could end up awesome for the Heat.
Coming up, our final segment here at Locked On NBA Thursday. But first, a quick message from our friends over at betonline.ag, because BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing. They've also got you covered for UFC, MMA, you name it. They've got it over at BetOnline. So don't sit on the sidelines anymore. It's time to get in on the action. You can do that using promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus on your very first deposit. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON. For a 50% welcome bonus on your very first deposit. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. And final segment here at Locked On NBA Thursday. I am Jackson Gatlin. He's Tony East. And before we dive into the last couple big topics we have, we got one little itty bitty one that we'll hit on very quickly, which is this: the Golden State Warriors trading forward Eric Paschal to the Utah Jazz for a future second round pick. You know, small trade, you know, Golden State Warriors clear a roster spot, Jazz pick up a serviceable player, you know, somebody probably towards the end of the bench rotation. But you can check out Locked On Warriors and Locked On Jazz for thoughts on that one if you care about that trade specifically. But let's get to another meaty one here, Tony. And John Collins signs his contract extension with the Atlanta Hawks, 5-year, $125 million contract. And there was a lot made of the John Collins situation with the Hawks, you know, his relationship with Trae Young. Does he stay? Does he get traded? You know, what goes on there? Does he sign somewhere else? I mean, this is a great move for the Hawks, a team that really showed, you know, a lot of promise throughout this past year's playoff run. I think that, you know, we were talking about feel-good stories earlier with the Knicks, right? And, you know, they were kind of the feel-good story throughout the NBA season, the one that kind of surprised everybody. I think if we talk about the feel-good team in the playoffs that surprised everybody, it was very clearly the Atlanta Hawks, who had what seemed like upset after upset and, you know, really were an inspire, you know, had a really inspiring playoff run.
Yeah, the Hawks were great in the playoffs. And, you know, who else was pretty good in the playoffs? John Collins, right? 14 points a game, shot 55% from the field, 36% from deep. Certainly a factor in helping him secure this deal, right? Trae Young went crazy. A lot of their ball handlers went nuts, so his scoring was a little down. But, I mean, he's been awesome for the Hawks basically since he got picked, and for a 19th pick, a complete home run from Atlanta here. Shoots extremely well, has mastered the three ball, or at least to the extent that they need him to. Can be a 20 points per game scorer when they need him to be. Just an excellent player. So he's really found himself in Atlanta. I kind of thought it was interesting how much money he ended up getting. You know, 5 years, it makes sense. He's awesome. You want to keep him for as long as possible. You have Trae Young locked up. You want to be the best team you can. But we're late enough in free agency that no one could really offer Collins this much, right? So they're not really bidding against anyone. So you want to keep your player happy and give him a good deal. And he's played fantastic. He's worth it. I was just surprised that Collins was able to extract this much money in a deal, but he's earned it. He's fantastic. So yeah, the Hawks definitely feel a good story. They were incredible in the playoffs last year. Nate McMillan got a ton out of this team, and Collins was a big part of that. So I think he's earned a deal like this. I'm just surprised he was actually able to get it at this point in free agency, but good for him.
I do think it's probably one of those situations where it's just, they know how integral he is to what they're trying to accomplish. He matches the timeline of their core. You know, you talked about his, you know, impressive play, all of the above, right? So why, you know, and I get if you're an organization, maybe they didn't do, you know, their due diligence and kind of letting him test the waters of free agency to see, you know, maybe they might've been able to shave off a few million off that deal, maybe get him at, you know, a $20 million a year price point instead of 25. But I think they did right by him. They said, no, we know you're a big part of what we're doing here. We want to get you taken care of. And they just said, you know, we're not going to play this back and forth game. We're not going to try and call your bluff on signing somewhere else. We're just going to, you know, give you this contract. Cause even though there wasn't anywhere else to sign, right, he wasn't going to get that money somewhere else. So they did right by their player. And I wish more organizations, you know, did that, right? Like they are investing in him, and hopefully it doesn't turn around to bite Atlanta in the ass down the line. So with that, let's go to the New Orleans Pelicans, who are bringing in Mike D'Antoni on their bench. Now, well, call, coaching consultant? Like, I mean, he's not an assistant coach. So like, I mean, is this just Mike D'Antoni's new like role in the NBA? Is he just going to be like the coach whisperer first with Steve Nash and the Brooklyn Nets? Now he's heading down to New Orleans to, you know, to help out Willie Green. Like, what is, you know, I'm interested to see what Point Zion does, because obviously that's Mike D'Antoni's like whole motif, right? Is you put the ball in this, in your star player's hands, and he's going to go out there and average 30 plus, you know, a 30 plus triple double. And so seeing what Zion does, you know, with, you know, space around him with Mike D'Antoni consulting for the team. I mean, how do you feel about this, Tony?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think that D'Antoni for the Pelicans beyond Zion, which first of all, I love that, but for a team with a first-year head coach, that's where I think D'Antoni as a coaching consultant has a lot of value, right? He's coached some great teams, some great players on his time. I think he'll be able to help Willie Green, you know, keep his team together, get a good system going there. And I don't know this for sure because coaching consultant's kind of a foreign title, I guess, but it kind of reminds me of what Steve Nash was doing with Golden State, where he was like focused on specific players at times, but also was kind of an assistant coach. So he can do a little bit of everything there. I like that role for him. And I love the Pelicans fit because if they unleash Point Zion, or they're able to, because their new point guard, air quotes, I'm on video, I can actually do that. Devontae Graham is a great off-ball catch and shoot guy. So if D'Antoni, who has been, you know, just gets a ton out of these stud ball handlers, James Harden, Steve Nash, all those guys in Brooklyn last year, right? He's optimized and been good at getting stars to play to their strengths. If he can get Zion to do something similar, maybe improve his playmaking a little bit. I mean, the Pelicans could just be must-watch TV like every day.
You know, which it would be just, you know, the dream for all the national TV broadcasts and wanting to plaster Zion over them as much as possible. But I will say there was one narrative that I kind of saw like, you know, creeping up a little bit on social media. And I want to push back on this is, you know, I think some people were maybe they were just joking about this, but the narrative seems to always pop up when you bring in an experienced, you know, veteran coaching caliber guy like a Mike D'Antoni to a new guy's system like Willie Green, that they're basically bringing him in case things don't work out with Willie Green, or like head coach in waiting, sort of like Nate McMillan, Lloyd Pierce this past season with the Atlanta Hawks. And unfortunately for Lloyd Pierce, that is exactly what happened, is Nate McMillan took over, you know, completely, you know, revitalize the Hawks, turn them around. And obviously they had a really successful postseason run. But I don't think that's the situation here with Mike D'Antoni, right? I think he is just being brought in as a consultant. They think that he, you know, what he brings to the table, as we've already illustrated with previous star players, and even not just star players, right? He just has a knack for being able to put the ball in somebody's hands. It doesn't have to necessarily be a star player, right? You can look back to, you know, when Linsanity took place, right? And, you know, it just has to be somebody who's comfortable with the ball in their hands and creating either for themselves or others, and putting the rest of the players, you know, on the floor in a position to succeed around that, and running very simple actions and schemes to be able to get the most out of, to extract the most value out of all the guys that you have on the court. And that's what Mike D'Antoni's made a career of doing. He's an offensive genius doing that. And so putting that down in New Orleans with Zion, with Willie Green and his current staff, I think it's going to hopefully bode well for the Pelicans, because they, you know, are sorely needing to turn things around with Zion down there before, you know, things get too sour now on his third head coach in just three seasons in the NBA. So with that, Tony, I kind of want to segue, because we have an interesting little, let's just take a look-see at the bottom of the Western Conference, because currently we've got six teams at the bottom of the Western Conference. Five teams, we're just looking at the bottom third. And then one of these six teams are going to make the play-in tournament next season. And when we're talking about these teams, I'm talking I'll just go in order from this past season. The Spurs, who did make the play-in tournament and finished 10th in the Western Conference. So we've got Spurs, Pelicans, Kings, Timberwolves, Thunder, and then my Houston Rockets, you know, bringing up the rear in the West. Of those six teams, Tony, who do you think actually takes that final play-in spot in the Western Conference? Because I think this is going to be an interesting little battle, really duking it out for that last little spot in the West.
So I kind of worked backwards to my answer. So stop me at any point if you disagree with me, but I immediately,
okay, because you're the Eastern Conference rep. So I'm the Western Conference rep. So I got you.
And I say something stupid. I immediately ruled out Houston and OKC. I loved the draft.
How dare you? I cannot. I am beside myself for both myself and Ryland style, just of the Locked On Thunder podcast. I am heat. No. Okay. Go ahead.
I loved both of those teams' drafts, but draft picks are bad in their first year. It's just how it is. So they're not tanking. Maybe they will be at some point this season. Maybe they're not going to start the season tanking, but they'll be bad teams, right? They're intentionally being bad teams. So they were the first two teams I immediately ruled out. So then I'm left with Minnesota, San Antonio, New Orleans, and Sacramento. And the interesting team for me there is the Spurs. How do I make this? What do I think about the Spurs? Because they lost DeRozan. That will clearly make them worse. They lost Patty Mills. That should make them worse. They add a good shooter in Doug McDermott. They haven't had shooting. But then they added some draft guys. So I think they're a worse team than last year. But Popovich always wants his guys get the system. You know, and always they always overachieve. Maybe not like they're not always good. They was overachieved, so I can't.
It's
quite
so hard to count out Popovich. It's so hard to count him out.
And next year's the year he'll break the. He should break the all-time wins record, right? So there'll be an inspired bunch of youngsters in San Antonio. The Pels have Zion. They have a coach that they should get more buy-in out of. They added good shooting as well this offseason. The Kings, they didn't add a ton of like high-end talent. They mostly just kept their own guys. But Davion Mitchell's a nice energetic piece for them out of the draft. I think that they added someone else that I'm forgetting that could help them on the wings a little bit as well. And then Karl Anthony Towns is amazing. So I have trouble sorting those four teams, but Zion's the best player on any of those four teams. They just added MDA. I like some of the moves they made in free agency. So I think I would rank the Pelicans as the most likely to make the play-in tournament. I'll let you, Western Conference consultant, let me know if I got that incorrectly. But I could honestly see Minnesota being sneakily good next year with a little better health. A new coach having the full offseason to integrate himself and Karl Anthony Towns playing a lot more. They were actually pretty good when D'Lo and Kat both played. So that's another team that I could see potentially getting in there.
I definitely have it as a toss-up right now between the Timberwolves and the Pelicans. I think even and if you're the Pelicans, right, a team that I think right now, if you're the Pelicans, you're definitely walking away like a loser in free agency, unfortunately. Like, it's been a brutal free agency and just, you know, couple weeks for the Pelicans organization.
Yes and no. Right? I mostly agree.
Well, give me you're saying yes and no. Give me your reason.
So they definitely struck out on the point guard market, right? And that makes them a big loser. If they could have gotten, I mean, they reportedly went for Chris Paul, they went for Kyle Lowry. They didn't keep Lonzo. Like, Graham is worse than Lonzo. Like, that swap is all weird. Like, I get why they're a loser, like, value wise this free agency, but they got off some bad money, they freed up some space. They added some important guys that I think will make them maybe a better team. Their asset use this offseason, certainly not great, right?
But there we go. I think you hit the nail on the head there. The asset use has been largely questionable.
I agree with that for sure.
They have positioned themselves for, you know, I think better future success by offloading some of that money and everything. So we'll see how that plays out. But I do think I lean Pelicans and potentially Timberwolves for that final spot. I do think the Spurs probably do regress a little bit despite any inspiration from Greg Popovich and potentially beating or, you know, surpassing the all-time wins record.
How many All-Stars have to be on the Sacramento Kings before you actually believe the Sacramento Kings will be a good basketball team?
At least two. I'm not even going to stay safe at one. I'm just going to say they need to have at least two.
Or Matt George, but just like, I can never get anything with the Kings. Like, I never will expect them to be good. That my whole life, basically since Chris Webber, it's been like this.
You know, I just feel like at this point, the Kings are just the punching bag of, you know, the NBA, and it just sucks. Like, I want them to be good just so that they can have a season or two of like being legit and, you know, really turn it around. And specifically, yeah, for Matt George, shout out Matt. We love Matt.
Shout out Matt George. We love Matt George.
Before we wrap this thing up, let's run through a quick list of the remaining NBA free agents, the kind of the, you know, cream of the crop of whoever's left. So clearly Kawhi Leonard, but he's not going anywhere. Kawhi's not a real free agent, right? Unless you've got some crazy tinfoil hat conspiracy theory.
I don't even think anyone left has enough money to give him a deal, right?
Exactly, so, right?
Yeah, he's staying with the Clippers.
All right, we got Danny Green, Reggie Jackson, Kelly Oubre, Dennis Schroeder, who may just wind up, you know, playing over in China at this point, unfortunately. Paul Millsap, Josh Hart, Lauri Markkanen, and last couple names on this list, James Ennis III and Hamidou Diallo.
Lou Williams. You forgot Lou Williams in there.
Did I forget Lou Will? Did I not have Lou Will on my list? I jotted up this list. Okay. Lou Will. All right. Did he not get snatched up by somebody? Am I misremembering this?
You know, he hasn't yet. I'm imagining he'll have a veteran swan song season coming up. But yeah, you know, he could be that veteran presence for a team. But yeah, that's the list, right? If Kawhi truly is going back to the Clippers, you could debate between Schroeder and Oubre and maybe Markkanen. I don't actually know. It's kind of hard to rank these guys. Who the best available guy still is, but we're getting close to the point where anyone signed is just a bench depth piece for good teams. Maybe Schroeder could start, but all the teams that would want of him to have already added their point guard. So looking like a lot of the guys left are scrounging for the last big deal they can get or finding a role that makes sense for them, but they waited a long time. So we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, with that, that's going to wrap up our show for today. Be sure to follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at JT Gatlin. You can follow Tony at TEastNBA. Be sure, if you haven't yet, subscribed to our brand new Locked On NBA YouTube channel. Subscribe wherever you listen to the podcast, Apple, Spotify, Google, the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcast. But for today's episode, thank you as always for watching. Thank you for listening. And we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On NBA Thursday.